Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Bill Anderson in for Steve Kraske. Facebook is planning to pull the plug on some 83 million accounts. Fake accounts, they say. The Techsperts are back, and today we'll talk about the Facebook announcement, Apple versus Samsung with huge patent law implications, a rover that will land on Mars this weekend, and you can watch it live, and MySpace. MySpace makes a comeback? Really? But first, Facebook's plan to disable millions of accounts. Our Techsperts have the details. Justin Parlett is the Support Systems Administrator at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He's our resident Apple expert. Good morning.
Hello, Bill.
And Dustin Jacobson is the Chief Strategy Officer at Flatsquare Technology Group. Hi, Dustin.
Great to be here.
Nice to have you guys back. Hey, so Facebook is going after 83 million fake accounts. Let's start with you, Justin. Explain that.
Yeah, well, basically, Facebook, now that they're answerable to lots of different people as opposed to just themselves, being a publicly traded company, is looking into accounts that are either violating the terms of service or perhaps just an account that someone has set up for their dog. And they're going to go ahead and delete those, as well as duplicated accounts. A lot of people will sometimes have two accounts for themselves, and they're going to try and put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, my understanding is that they have like three categories, duplicate accounts, misclassified accounts, which I think are commercial enterprises, Dustin?
Yes. Yeah. So there's approximately, I was just reading this here, they're termed undesirable accounts, Facebook is admitting. That's approximately somewhere around 8.7% of all accounts. Now, some of them are duplicates. So if people have maybe a work and a personal account, some of them are for their pets or just made up, fake profiles. And some of them are where a company will actually not really impersonate a person, but, a long time ago, it was kind of confusing. You could have groups and all these different things.
Right.
So people created a personal account for a business where they really should have had a page versus a personal account. So, yeah, there's several cases and several reasons for this violation, sometimes intentional, in other cases unintentional. And now because of a public company and whatnot, they're trying to clear this all up.
And there's a third group. I think it's represents the smallest number, something like they're estimating 1.5%, and that's the group that is engaged in spamming and other undesirable
activities. The breakdown goes a little bit like this. It's 4.8% are duplicates. 2.4 are user misclassified accounts, and that's just users creating personal profiles for a business or an organization or a non-human entity, as Facebook puts it. So anybody out there who has an account for your plant, that's going bye-bye. And then 1.5% are the undesirable accounts that Facebook determines have violated their terms of service in some way, shape, or form. So out of the 955 million monthly active users in Facebook, they're saying that as of March of this year, between 42.25 million and 50.70 million users are in one way or another violating these terms. So that's still a small percentage for their total user base, but it's a lot when we hear that number.
What, 955 million users, right?
Or monthly accounts? Active users, yeah. Now,
amazing.
Keep in mind that they do have more users than that that maybe aren't as active.
Uh-huh.
Like my mom gets on her Facebook maybe once a month, which is probably for the best.
but the implication here is that this is nothing more than just them trying to be beholden to their mission statement and to be beholden to their stakeholders.
Yeah, house cleaning.
Their stockholders.
Yeah,
rather.
House cleaning. They've made a vow to be more transparent with the way that they operate as a company since they're publicly traded, and they have to. So we'll see more stuff like this.
Yeah, and a lot of this has been going on for a long time because it's very difficult historically to really create a Facebook page is what's called a test account.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like an account that you want live. So a lot of developers historically had to create fake profiles in order to create a test application or a test page and run it through legal and get it approved and all that kind of stuff. So there's valid reasons why a lot of these accounts were actually created. Not nearly to this scale, but there was some valid reasons for some of that went on.
Well, before we leave Facebook, I want to talk about Facebook Stories. They announced that. They launched that yesterday with their first story, and I guess every month they're going to have a new story.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, lukewarm to this idea.
Are you?
Yeah. Well, basically, they're compiling the fuzziest, happiest stories
right.
on Facebook and putting them up at the top of my timeline. So, I mean, I get enough of that already personally. But this is another way for Facebook to kind of become a more content-driven site and hopefully get some user-generated content up at the top of your page as opposed to just – you know, all of those photographs that everybody is sharing these days.
Yeah. And you know, there was one quote that is saying, you know, this is the future of news because it's going to be, you know, that revolutionary. And I don't think it's there yet. Yeah. And that's not really Facebook's intention. I mean, Facebook is just, once again, they're constantly evolving, constantly changing. And they may try it and nobody like it and they, you know, it disappears.
Yeah.
So it's another one of those things that they're going to try. They're going to see what the response is. And if they don't get a good response or it has a negative impact on revenue for some reason, maybe they can't monetize it like they can other stuff, then it may just go away. So
yeah,
Google does this kind of stuff all the time where they'll throw something out and it works. Great. If it doesn't, great. Move on.
To me, it sounds like NPR's StoryCorps meets Facebook.
Well, yeah, sort of, except I think StoryCorps is infinitely more interesting than a lot of yeah. Facebook updates that are out there currently.
Yeah. I will say this, though. The first story was about a 27-year-old New Delhi resident who lost his memory. And, of course, he's using Facebook to recapture his history, even though he doesn't remember it, at least he's reminded of who his friends are. The guy didn't know his mother even. So
someone making good use of timeline.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else on that, gentlemen?
No, I think it's a wait and see. I mean, it's one of many things. Facebook is constantly changing. And once again, we'll see if they can't make money off of it, because as a public company, that's really what it boils down to now.
Okay.
Then that may be go the way of past updates that just disappeared.
After 25 years, the VGA port is going to disappear from computers. A layperson explanation. How is this going to affect me? What did it do? And will I still be able to do that? And let's start with you, Dustin.
Well, you know, this is an interesting story because it has been around for 25 years. And a lot of people think of, you know, the USB cord as like evolutionary. You know, at first it was you had all these really weird connectors. And then that was really kind of one of the first standards when it comes to kind of, you know, standard mouse and a keyboard and all that kind of stuff. Well, the VGA has been the monitor equivalent of that for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you went, you know, took your computer to someone else's house or to a store to get it fixed or whatever, it was a standard. People pretty much expected that. Now, the challenge with that is that the quality was average at best.
Okay.
It was never really great. At the time, it was sufficient. But over the years, better and better technology has come out. But because people had this investment in this old technology, no one wanted to upgrade. So it's typically something that people would upgrade, you know, when they get a new computer, they get a new monitor, they get a new cable, those kind of things. And eventually that just old technology just goes away. But in a lot of businesses, that's still the standard.
Hotels, for example, right?
Yeah, there's hotels and conferences. So if you take your computer and you're, you know, when I travel and stuff, I have to take a whole slew of different connectors. You know, if I'm going to use this kind of computer or that kind of computer connect into, I have to have a variety of different connectors. So it'll be nice at some point where I can kind of minimize that, where there's a new current standard that provides, you know, high quality, high definition video, because the old standard just does not. But it's something that's been around forever. You know, 25 years in the computer world is a lifetime.
Mr. Parlett.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think nobody's going to shed any tears to see go away. But at the same time, there's going to be some pain in that transition. A lot of forecast scenarios say that they're not going to see VGA completely gone from the workspace or, you know, our travel lives until 2017. So we've got a little ways to go before it completely drops out of our sight.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Bill Anderson. The Techsperts are here. We want you to join us. Have you ever created a fake Facebook account? For what purpose? Comment on our Facebook page or shoot us an email, uptodate@kcur.org. We'll even take phone calls, 816-235-2888, 235-2888. Techspert Justin Parlett is an Apple expert, a systems analyst for UMKC. He's a web video maker and a pretty nice guy to boot. Dustin Jacobson is the chief strategy officer at Flat Square Technology Group, a leader in mobile, social, and emerging technology projects. Also a pretty fine person.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen, let's talk about Instagram. They're now saying they've got, and this surprises me, 80 million users.
It doesn't surprise me. I'm a member of Instagram. I use it fairly regularly. I'm kind of new to it, actually, considering I usually adopt a lot of apps and mobile platforms really early on. I'm very late to the Instagram game myself.
Let's back up and explain to those who might not know about Instagram what it is exactly.
Yeah, and Instagram, you know, was a company, and there's been a variety of these kind of services that, you know, allow you to take a picture, and either you can use a picture that's already on your phone, and this was a mobile-oriented service. Take a picture that was on your phone, or you can actually use the application to take a picture, and then you can customize it. There's a variety of different filters and effects that you can apply to that filter or to that that photo to actually make it look better or make it look from the 70s or, you know, change the shadows or distortion or some really cool effects. Now, there are several companies that have done this in the past or have tried to do it as well, but nobody really was able to reach the success and gain the amount of momentum that Instagram was. Well, and at 30 million users, ultimately they got bought for $1 billion. So it was interesting to see, you know, here you have this company, 2 years old, 20 employees, you know, get bought for $1 billion, negotiated in the living room of, you know, a high profile celebrity, you know, in the Valley, in the social media world. So, you know, here, you know, that kind of all takes place. And a lot of people are like, okay, now what? Now they got bought by Facebook. Is that the end of it? You know, is it kind of lost its cool factor and its luster, so to speak? Because it's kind of like, you know, when you have, they're saying, you know, when your parents get on Facebook, then it's over, right? No one, it's not really cool anymore.
Yeah, right.
So what they're saying was, okay, now it's mainstream. You know, did Instagram sell out and did they lose its appeal? As we found out, no, they didn't. They've seen now their success catapult. Now, part of that is also because of the release on Android devices as well, I think is pretty significant. So, you know, Apple right now has a big share of it, but Android owns the other half. Well, about the same time they released it on the other smartphones. So all of a sudden, you essentially doubled your market opportunity at the same time. So that they grew is not surprising, but that they grew that much, that fast is pretty amazing.
Justin, I interrupted you a moment ago. Go ahead and finish what you were saying.
Oh, I was just basically saying that Instagram as a service is something that as it grows, it's interesting to see the type of photographs and posts that are placed upon it. And it makes it really easy for users. And I think one reason why people really embrace it is because the moment you take your picture, you can upload it to both Facebook and Twitter and a multitude of other social media outlets. So, like, the main reason why I adopted it is because I was tired of having to post my images twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to put it on Facebook and then onto Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one reason why it's feeding a lot of it. And then also it just makes people feel like they're awesome photographers. You know,
are you
they
able,
may not be.
Well, yeah, but there are still certain principles of taking
right.
Picture
I mean,
that
if,
apply.
If you have to be able to frame a picture properly, use maybe your rule of three, and you know, take a nice picture, and then if you want, you can throw a filter onto it, or you can kind of change the depth of field a little bit. So it gives users a lot of tweaks, and it's kind of neat. There's actually a big movement on Instagram right now following the hashtag #NoFilter, where people are taking pride in not putting filters on their Instagram photos. So it's neat. It's a social network of its own. It's almost entirely mobile, as Dustin said. If you go to the Instagram website, it basically just allows you to log into your account and edit your account. You can't actually view Instagram from their own website. In fact, one of the only ways to look at Instagram from a computer is through a third-party plugin on Hootsuite, which is an entirely different social network.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of interesting that just as a mobile platform, they've reached this 80 million user threshold.
Pinterest is the competition or not
so
much?
They kind of provide separate services. Pinterest is more of a digital scrapbook.
Okay.
For you to collect things that interest you online and share them with others. And Instagram is more, I took this picture, look at this bagel I ate. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And I just made it black and white, so it's even cooler.
Yeah. Your mom would like that.
You know,
her once a month appearance on
Facebook. Yeah, every now and then, you know, I'll post a picture of a meal that I'm eating and I'll be like, Val Parlett likes this.
Yeah.
You know, so good. Yeah, it's nice.
So it just amazes me that with all these emerging technologies, they are so specialized and so unique, yet they get millions of participants or users in like no time.
Yeah, and they're also very interconnected anymore because so, you know, to use an example, so I was at the Royals game Wednesday night. So I took a picture.
I'm sorry.
Posted it. Ouch. You know, posted.
I am a royal spam.
Yes. So I took a picture, applied a little filter action to it. You know, and as soon as you share something, it shows up in your Instagram feed, which is essentially your feed of all your photos and your friends' photos.
Uh-huh.
And but I also shared it, you know, on Facebook and Twitter because it was social media night and some other stuff. So it was just all interconnected. So I was checked in at Foursquare, took a picture, and shared that to Twitter and Facebook. So I actually kind of integrated four social media services all within one action. So a lot of people, you'll see that. They'll take pictures using Instagram but share it back to Facebook or Twitter. So everything is very intertwined, which kind of helps everything grow faster.
So what happens if I come up with this really cool technology, a little toy or a gadget? How do I become a player in that group of things that already exist and are popular?
It depends on if you want to make money or not. Because, you know, realistically, Instagram isn't making any money. Now, they all have millions, the employees, because of the purchase from Facebook. But the revenue that they were generating was zero. So for, you know, a 20-person company to get bought for $1 billion with no revenue, that's kind of mind-blowing if you think about it.
Yeah.
Even that just doesn't happen. So some people are chasing users. How can I get as many users as possible on my system and hoping that money will follow? Whereas other companies are starting more with a commerce model, and I see several companies kind of evolving in that direction. How can I actually make money? Maybe it's only, you know, a little bit of money on a small number of people, but how can I then go and sell that idea and say, hey, look, I'm making great money. I only have, you know, a couple thousand users or 100,000 users, but I want to take that to a few million. And then all of a sudden, you know, you add a few more decimals and that's a lot of money. So, you know, there's companies that are kind of taking both approaches. So lots of companies are trying this, hey, I'm just going to grow my users and give it away for free and all this cool stuff, which works for a while until you run out of money.
Yeah. When does the bottom fall off?
Right.
Here?
At some
that
point,
frightens me.
Everybody needs to get paid, right?
Yeah.
Everyone has a mortgage. So at some point, you have to make money. And there's some companies that are –
Not everyone does have a mortgage.
Well, true. But some, you know, someone ultimately is going to have to foot that bill. Now, some companies can last longer until they get bought out. You know, they get a big enough of a user base to then justify that purchase. So those are kind of the two models. And what really changed when Instagram got bought is because everyone is kind of thinking, well, that model's kind of dead. Like you kind of have to go into it, which makes sense, with, you know, a plan to actually make money. And Instagram really didn't have any intention. They just wanted to provide a cool service, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're getting money thrown at them.
What do you make of all this? We'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888, 235-2888. It's the Techsperts on UpToDate. Steve Kraske's away, and I'm Bill Anderson, and we invite you to participate in this show. Okay, more news from the commercial world here related to advertisers' insistence on reaching me, no matter how I feel about it. And I'm referencing Datalogix here. They have a device that delivers a television stream. It goes through all sorts of algorithms and horoscopes, analyzes my demographic profile, my retail purchasing habits. I'm right so far, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then advertisers can target messages to me on television and on other digital platforms.
Yeah, and this is actually, you know, a collaboration with TiVo, which makes sense.
Oh, it is. I did not know that.
So and the way that this works is essentially they're trying to gather as much data about you as possible. And if you look at the largest companies out there right now within technologies, Google, Apple, Facebook, Twitter to some extent as well, they know a lot about you. Once you start pulling in all that data, Foursquare and everything, just within the social media space, there's a significant amount of data that people are just openly publishing. Now, a lot of the data on the kind of direct marketing side has always been available. Where you live, you know, what your car is worth, what year it is, how many kids you have. A lot of that is public information that a lot of people don't really think about. But the ability here is now companies are starting to figure out, I want to reach that person. And guess what? They're not watching TV anymore. They may not be, you know, doing these big things where you could target them previously. So how can we still reach those people now that they're not watching TV, but they're watching Hulu and they're watching, you know, movies and they're watching things through Apple TV or others. So there's companies that are coming out and trying to figure out, okay, now everything's moved to the internet versus, you know, big broadcast type media, how can we still reach them? Because there's still, more than ever, the request from big brands to want to be able to reach a large number of consumers. So there's companies now that are coming out and then can track across different channels. So when you think about some of the larger email services, Gmail in particular, they know a lot about you. They read and scan. I mean, read isn't the right term, but they're scanning for key terms every email that comes through their system. Yahoo, Hotmail, which is now, I guess, Outlook. But all these big services are scanning all that because they're providing a service for free mm-hmm. in return for the opportunity to advertise to mm-hmm. you. So they're collecting tons and tons of data. So while historically they knew where you live and how many kids and what car you drove, now they know what you're talking about, every email that you are doing, and now they're kind of making that switch also now to multimedia. They know what videos you're watching on YouTube. They know what TV shows you're watching. And a lot of companies already knew this, but it was very siloed. So, you know, iTunes knows every song that I've purchased, every app that I've downloaded, all those kinds of things. But they didn't have that connection to other things. They didn't, I mean, they could get there, but it's pretty complicated. And now you see companies like this starting to come out with ways that they can track across different forms of media and then target them. So they know not only what videos you're watching, but, oh, maybe you subscribe to some magazines, or maybe you're watching, you know, this thing, but on a mobile device versus mm-hmm. on your TV. Previously, that was separate, and now they're starting to bring all this together.
Justin Parlett, does this give you pause? Are you comfortable with this?
Well, I mean, really, if you're online, if you do anything online and you think that it's only between you and your internet service provider, then, you know, you probably have to wake up to reality that that hasn't been true for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
This illusion of privacy that many people believe exists is no longer there. And I think this is just giving form to it. And for this specific group that we're talking about, Datalogix, I mean, they're working just with a sample group of about 4 million households that they can pull data from. It sounds like a lot, but
yeah.
Realistically, if we talk about the number of mobile devices, the number of computers, number of TVs, that's pretty small. But I think that this is a herald of things to come. Does it give me pause? Well, maybe not, because I know, for example, when I log into Facebook, the ads that I see now are genuinely things that do interest me. Now, most of the time, it's stuff that I already know about or have already purchased. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I like the fact that it's showing me ads for new bow ties or a Ben Folds 5 concert coming yeah. to town, rather than some sort of weird, you know, hygiene product for a woman that's not relevant to me as a consumer.
Nice bow tie you wore today.
Bow ties are cool.
By the way, yeah. Very nice. From CNET comes this headline. Facebook's mobile-only use jumps 23% since March. I mean, what's happening is that Facebook users are foregoing desktops, accessing their accounts on mobile devices. I mean, I think this is pretty – this goes beyond Facebook, really. This is just the new reality.
Yeah, this is happening more and more. I mean, we're talking of the 543 million monthly mobile users, apparently 20% of them are accessing it only through their phone or a tablet device, as opposed to just going onto their computer or like a mixture of it. So that's a large number.
Well, and a lot more people are getting on, you know, Facebook in general, but they're checking that throughout the day. So it's, you know, one of the challenges is a lot of companies are blocking social media, Facebook, Twitter, whatnot, from their corporate networks for concerns about, you know, employee productivity. But what a lot of businesses are ignoring is that, guess what? You know, most people have smartphones now that have, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff installed, easily accessible. So they're able to take all that information and now carry it with them throughout the day. And if they don't or can't get on their work computer, their phone is right next to them that they have with them throughout the day. So people are actually using that to stay in touch throughout the day.
Well, and in addition, when we look at that number, Facebook's overall U.S. growth was only about 10% in this last quarter. But overseas, it's huge. Brazil had growth up 146%, and India grew by 84%. And a majority of users overseas are primarily mobile users. So that's why you're seeing such a large increase in the mobile platform for Facebook, in addition to the things that we've already talked about.
Let's take a breather. When the tech experts come back, we'll talk about MySpace making a comeback, Apple versus Samsung, the patent infringement trial, and Rover, Red Rover, come over. We'll talk about that, and we'll take your phone calls, and we hope to hear from you from Twitterland as well. Brian McTavish joins us later this hour with the Weekend To-Do List. Steve Kraske is away. I'm Bill Anderson, and you're listening to Up To Date on KCUR. Welcome back to Up To Date. I'm Bill Anderson. If you missed yesterday's conversation about how the world and Kansas City are moving forward on the fight against HIV and AIDS, you'll find it in all our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Monday on the program, a look at Missouri Amendment 2, the so-called Right to Pray Amendment. It's a conversation about Missouri church and state. That's Monday on the show. Joining us this morning are the Texperts, Justin Parlett and Dustin Jacobson. We want to hear from you, too. What are your thoughts on all this conversation this morning, and will you be watching the rover landing live? NASA's going to be providing a feed, and we'd like to hear about that from you and on other matters as well. 235-2888, 816-235-2888. So I'm reading that MySpace, and this one shocked me, Dustin. MySpace is making a comeback, thanks to Justin Timberlake.
It is. And when you look at their kind of roots and where they started, it was very focused on entertainment. And then it just grew crazy and kind of grew out of control. So they couldn't actually keep the control kind of focus on where they wanted, which was, at the time, entertainment. So it got to be just a social network. And all of a sudden, Facebook enters the market, a real competitor, a real solid product, offering an alternative to MySpace. And all of a sudden, you see their usage drop off a cliff, literally. So then, they kind of like, okay, now what? At one point valued for billions and billions of dollars. And of course, Facebook now, approaching $100 billion. How do we kind of rebuild, right? And Justin had a good analogy here, or metaphor, in a minute ago. But they did really kind of have to start over because everyone had left MySpace. And I don't know when the last time was I even personally logged in from MySpace, Justin.
It was a miracle when I was doing research for this show, and maybe miracle's a strong word. No, I'm sticking with miracle. I actually remembered my MySpace password, and I don't think I'd logged into the site since maybe 2008. So
that's amazing.
It had been a while.
It is a miracle, actually.
It really was. I feel very blessed. But there was lots of spam in there, and that's what it was. But one thing that I did notice, and part of this revitalization, is that they've essentially burned MySpace down to the ground and rebuilt it. Mm-hmm. The design of it is very clean.
Is it?
And it's focused primarily upon finding music. People seem to forget that MySpace still has licensing for millions of songs. They have a larger music library than Spotify or a lot of other streaming services. And that's what they're trying to capitalize on. This investment group that bought MySpace last year for, what, $34
million? 35.
Yes. A pittance of what Rupert Murdoch paid for it, are really trying to focus on this. They brought Justin Timberlake on board so they can capitalize on his cool factor. And I don't know if he's brought the sexy back to MySpace, but people are certainly paying attention to it now.
He's a pretty strong spokesperson also.
He is.
Articulate,
bright
man.
He speaks very well, and I love his first name. But the thing that really kicks about MySpace right now is they just signed up like a million users within the span of a month.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And they're really focusing back on people who are in their tweens and people who are in their early 20s. That's kind of the demographic that they're wanting to hook in, because these are people who are interested in finding new music and sharing it with folks. And that's kind of what they're going for.
At their peak, they had about, 80 million users?
Something
is that
like
about
that.
Right?
Yeah.
They maybe have 30
million. 75.9 million.
Yeah.
And now they have 29 people. 29 million.
Well, they have 30 because
30.
Justin just
come back.
Log back in.
30.
Yeah, 29 million people visited MySpace last month. So obviously that's a huge drop. So now one of the challenges is, okay, now we've got, reasonable size group of people. How can we get advertisers interested again? Because, in the agency world, when I was first kind of working with MySpace, it was complicated. Like the deals were really, really strange. But you could get tons of traffic. But then everyone moved over to Facebook. So now it's kind of like, okay, now how do we re-engage all these big brands back into being interested in MySpace?
And I think the key for MySpace, if they want to become some sort of a player, is not to try to compete with Facebook or Twitter or Google+. One thing that they're doing right is they are heavily integrated to those services.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very easy to tie in. In fact, you can use your Facebook login to log into Facebook or to log into MySpace now. But as long as they try not to become those big social networks, if they're focusing on the entertainment field, I think they'll do okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was interesting because some people were saying, okay, this is the death of MySpace. When they opened it up to signing in through Facebook, they're like, mm-hmm. wait, how is that? That was your direct competitor, and now you're allowing people to use their Facebook, you know, authentication to then come back into MySpace. But really, it was smart because they knew that most people, with the exception of Justin, had forgotten what their password was. They didn't know what – I mean, I was the same way. I was like, wait, what was – I don't even remember.
It was pure luck.
What password? Well, I don't know what my user is. I actually had it written down securely, of course. But I had to look it up. I didn't know what it was because it had been forever since I'd last logged in.
It was on a Post-it note inside of your Trapper Keeper.
We have an email from Sergio, and he writes with a question. I'm a business owner. When I started a personal Facebook account for my business, I did so because I wanted to test Facebook out. I've kept it that way for about 3 years. Now, with the news that Facebook is going to possibly delete the personal account that I set up for my business, am I faced with a deadline to create a page and move over all my friends into likes for the page?
I mean, I would just start that process now.
You would?
They haven't announced a public deadline. They haven't said, we're turning these all off by April 1st. You know, there's none of that.
Okay.
But they've announced that they're going to start doing this. So the sooner you can make that transition and the more natural you can make it for your end users to transition over to liking your business page, you should probably just kind of begin that now.
And Facebook wants to keep those users. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't want them to go away. They kind of have to enforce their terms and conditions because that's how it's always been. Now, their terms and conditions have changed over time, especially as it relates to privacy, but they don't want to lose those users because, once again, the worse that their numbers look, then there goes their stock price, and that's
right.
being pummeled badly enough the way it is. So they want those users to stick around. They want them to grow, but they want them to use the tools correctly. And there's some huge advantages to converting it because you can actually get more things and there's better features to being a business page than just an individual user.
The Techsperts are with us on Up to Date on KCUR. In a few minutes, Brian McTavish joins us for the weekend to-do list. Okay, Marketplace, NPR, and other sources have been all over this Apple versus Samsung patent infringement trial. Your thoughts, gentlemen. We'll start with you, Dustin.
Well, for me, it's kind of this back and forth. I mean, everyone's kind of claiming they did this first. At the end of the day, where I'm sure Justin and I disagree, but is that they took inspiration from each other. There's no way to ignore other devices that were released, and a lot of people had very similar ideas. Where it gets complicated, and I think I may have mentioned this in the past, but Apple is one of the most litigious organizations out there because they have so many patents, and I'm not sure what the number is. I just know it's a mm-hmm. lot.
Mm-hmm. A bazillion?
A bazillion, I think, is probably an accurate approximation. So they're spending tons of money, and rightfully so. They have to protect intellectual property. So, you know, there's a lot of back and forth. There's some kind of underhanded things that have gone on, but it's really just big boys playing with billions of dollars at stake.
Let me throw this in here. Online writer Martin Williams wrote, perhaps it's no wonder the Wall Street Journal has called it the patent trial of the century. I mean, are we giving this too much attention, putting too much into this trial?
Well, my take on it is this. I think that while the iPhone was a big paradigm shift in technology and in the mobile platform space,
and I
think that's irrefutable, I don't necessarily think that it's something that should be taken to this point. I really wish that these two had been able to settle this, you know, behind closed doors mm-hmm. without a trial. But I think it's really interesting because this is going to determine where U.S. legal system draws
right.
the line between what counts as copying
yeah.
and what's true innovation.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And so I think that's the great fallout from this is that we'll finally get some sort of a bright line, hopefully. But at the same time, this is going to waste a tremendous amount of time
and dollars.
Yeah. And, you know, and Apple's got money to burn. So, I mean,
$100 million.
They've got a lot of money to burn, even even more so than Samsung. I think yesterday Apple was valued at 28 times that of what Dell is currently valued.
Which wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
And that growth is just since 2007.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's insane to think about that. So I think what it's going to come down to is the coolest thing out of this whole process for me, and I think for a lot of people, is getting a peek at some of Apple's early prototypes, devices that would eventually become iPhone and iPad and where that's going. And I think that's probably what the public's going to gain from this.
Yeah.
Is because if you look online and there's a lot of galleries, these devices are actually really cool looking.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat to compare them with what the final product came out to be, especially for tech geeks like myself who enjoy the design.
Right. Well, and there's
maybe no one else cares, but I think it's neat.
I have to laugh. You almost sound like someone who has stock in Apple.
You're going to get me in trouble.
But I mean, and you look at why, I understand why Apple is going to this trouble. I mean, they dropped 5 years ago a computer from Apple Computer. It was no longer Apple Computer. It's just Apple, because electronics is now – that's their core business. Computers is really, 10%. So I understand why they have to protect their intellectual property. It is interesting from a consumer, because you get to see all this stuff that really shouldn't have ever been released, a lot of confidential private documents that are coming out in a variety of different legal and questionable fashions. but it's at the end of the day, is really going to change and impact how – intellectual property, evolves, because a lot of these patents are very similar, and you could really dispute either way in some of these arguments, because everyone's inspired by everything else.
For the space cadets in the audience and studio, especially the studio, perhaps mostly the studio, visitors to Times Square and other locations, I'm finding out, will be able to watch NASA's largest ever rover explore Mars. Now, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, what they're doing is Curiosity, which is the name of the Mini Cooper-sized rover that NASA has just kind of shot off into space and is finally going to touch down on Mars. They're actually going to broadcast its touchdown live in Times Square, which is going to be really cool, I think. Now, what's interesting to me is that there's about what they call like the 7 minutes of terror.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going like 13,000 miles per hour.
Yeah, and it's got to slow down within 7 minutes and land safely on the surface. And that, to me, is just the neatest part about this. Now, here's what's cool. Because it takes 14 minutes for a signal to travel from Mars to Earth, they have no control over what happens during those 7 minutes.
It's all
and we have no idea what's going on. So we could be watching this live stream at 1:30 in the morning Eastern time.
Yeah.
If you're awake for that, I will be.
And you'll see a lot of master control shots, too.
Yeah, yeah. You'll see what's going on there. Yeah. A lot of tense people, I would imagine.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
A lot of people wearing ties with nice haircuts.
And then, of course, we'll have the photo image manipulation after the fact with all the little Martians running around.
Right, right. Michael Bay will use the footage someday in another Transformers film, and it'll be terrible, and we'll all hate it. But in the meantime, we can experience this cool new feat. And even better, NASA's released two videos explaining Curiosity, and both of them are narrated by William Shatner and Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
So if you're a big dork like
me,
it's a cool watch.
I'm close to dorkhood.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. And it sounds like the Mars lander, in some respect, is coming to Kansas City. Jeff, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
We're doing great.
Hey. Yeah, I'm planning to watch it. Actually, I saw it on Facebook as you all were talking about. There's a public viewing at the planetarium down there at Union Station, so I'm pretty excited to
go
there. I might be a little late to work on Monday, but I don't mind going to watch it. I remember watching the shuttle in grade school. We'd take time out to watch it, so I'm always I'm kind of a nerd about that stuff too, I guess. But it's it won't come around that often, I don't think.
No, it's awesome, especially with as much as our space budget has been cut. Stuff like this is kind of getting rarer and rarer, and it's really cool. And I just have one question for you, sir. You do realize you just said on the radio that you might be late to work Monday because you're going to stay up late, and you gave your name and location, right?
I did. My first name only, so I might be
okay,
right?
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, though.
Well, thank you for calling. Dustin, will you be watching this also?
I will watch the recap, actually. I like to watch the highlight reel.
Yeah.
So
that's how I am with Family Guy.
Yeah.
Well, there's not going to be a lot of live action, really. It sounds like it's, other than the fact that we're watching an image from Mars, I don't think we'll see a lot of movement.
Well, not initially.
Yeah, and I like a lot of the kind of the renderings that show like how it has to slow down and the big parachute that inflates and how it kind of
the rockets
and I mean that kind of cool things are what's really kind of amazing to me is you know for it to slow down and not just skip like a rock across the pond of Mars.
Yeah.
It just
it still could do that.
Right.
And I think that's why people are so interested in watching this. I think there's a small section of people
they just want to
see like I think it's NASCAR fans. They watch it for the crashes.
Yeah.
And I think it's like that. Well, that's what I was told. I don't know. Bill's laughing at me, but I that's what I've been told.
Okay.
We're going to get calls.
I don't know how much attention this needs, but the FBI, this sort of surprised me, threw out tons of paper records because they've gone paperless now. And this is part of a 12-year, $600 million project. I would have thought the FBI would have gone paperless quite a few years ago.
Well, apparently they've had a hard time getting some of their legacy agents, some of the folks who've been there for a while, to convert from paper records. And anyone who works in a large IT group and supports a large number of customers is going to know that there are users who just prefer to have their emails printed and read to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can read it themselves, depending on how important they are. So what it is they've just basically spent $600 million over the last 12 years digitizing everything, and they've just now kind of got everybody to sign off on board. So this is kind of interesting, and I think it's a milestone in efficiency for government space because we're not going to need as much storage as they had in the past.
Yeah.
So it can streamline the operation and possibly save the taxpayers some money.
I can't let you guys get out of here until we talk to about this Twitter account, at NBCDelayed. It already has 26,000 followers. And I have to admit, I started following it. It's pretty darn funny.
Oh, it's great.
Here's one of the tweets. If you want to watch something live, watch the Bear Cam. And then, spoiler alert, London to host 2012 games. And I have to share one more, and then I'll be done. American colonists announce independence. King to respond.
Yeah, and it's... There's several funny ones. I mean, I've only been, 30-some. But there's some real challenges because people are there and essentially everything's live now. And it's, you know, there's only a few hours times difference. So it's not like you can really hide that. And you can't really catch up, so to speak. So people are – if someone wins, they're going to talk about it. And
yeah.
There's a lot of restrictions and different things like that around professional sporting events. But the reality is you can't control thousands of people there that are in the moment and want to share their favorites.
Okay. Let's talk about the gadget of the month here.
Yeah. So, Dustin, you have a real gadget of the month. I feel like yours is an actual really cool thing. And mine is more of a touchy-feely, happy kind of gadget.
We don't want that.
We should.
Dustin, go ahead.
It's cool, you should go first.
Gloom and doom,
mine is pretty amazing. It's there's a company now that's creating these organs on a chip. And it's really now mostly focused on research. They've got the lung on a chip. They've got a bunch of different now kind of organs. And it's, you know, taken millions and millions of dollars to create this. But one of the challenges is really the human body is so complex. Trying to figure out drug interactions for all these complex medicine is very challenging. So there's an institute at Harvard University that's now creating organ-on-a-chip research. So they can actually test out medicines and a bunch of these things with a simulation of the human body. Just like they run simulations with weather and other things, now they're actually testing out organs and drug interactions through these complicated technologies. So that's my amazing thing.
Which I think is going to be a boon for the medical community. I mean, that's just really neat. Mine is that there's a gentleman in California who has built a full-sized Wally, and it really works. And he takes it around to museums and to hospitals and lets sick children interact with Wally.
Excellent.
And it's really cool. The video that's online is just heartwarming. I defy you to not smile when these kids just light up when Wally says their name. And that's really cool because there are no schematics for this. He had to completely build it from scratch. Really cool looking.
And almost 4,000 hours for him to build it.
That's a nice way to end today's show, the Techsperts segment. I appreciate it. And I don't understand why Steve Kraske doesn't like working with you guys. I think you're fine.
Wow.
Thank you, gentlemen. Techspert Justin Parlett is an Apple expert, a systems analyst for UMKC. Dustin Jacobson is the Chief Strategy Officer at Flat Square Technology Group and a leader in mobile, social, and emerging technology groups.